Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from The Grave Talks. If you're liking this program, I invite you to become a grave keeper. That is a supporter of this program. You are the folks who will financially allow this show to continue going forward. $5 a month gets you access to advanced episodes of the show as I create them. Typically 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, sometimes even more episodes in advance available exclusively for our grave keeper members. Plus, exclusive interview segments that are not going to be available to the public, only to gravekeepers. Typically an extra 10, 15, 20 minutes of interview time with future guests of our show going forward. It's exclusive content, it's advanced content, and it's only for gravekeepers who are helping to keep the show on the air. It takes a tremendous amount of time every single week for me to put this show together, get it up, get it on the air, have it hosted, bandwidth, all of that. And I love doing it, but we do need to make sure it's financially viable, and at least to support the costs of running this thing. So if you like the show, please consider becoming a gravekeeper through our website, thegravetalks.com or patreon.com/thegravetalks. $5 a month, get advanced access and exclusive content as well to keep this show on the air. Thank you for your support. I hope you enjoy it just as much as I do. Check it out, thegravetalks.com or patreon.com/thegravetalks. And thank you for your support. Today on The Grave Talks, haunted Bobby Mackey's music world. It's known as one of the most haunted nightclubs in America. Rumors say that haunted Bobby Mackey's music world was once a slaughterhouse in the early 19th century. Later records show it being a roadhouse. Names such as the Brisbane and others. Today, it is the music venue owned and operated by country singer Bobby Mackey. Some legends claim the property holds a portal to the other side. Some say the side it points to is down, meaning hell, almost a gateway of sorts to the underworld. Rumors fly abound that the ghost of a man found dead in a field mere miles from the front door haunts Bobby Mackey's music world. They claim that a murder took place at the hands of Satanists who cursed the location and everyone involved in prosecuting that case. Further stories of turmoil and turbulence include that of a pregnant dancer named Johanna. It's rumored that she committed suicide in the 1950s after her father murdered her lover and father to her unborn child in the dressing room of what is now Bobby Mackey's music world. What is the history of these stories? What haunts Bobby Mackey's music world today? On this episode of The Grave Talks, we talk with Laura, one of the paranormal investigators who hosts tours through Bobby Mackey's to this day.
Well, as far as the structure that would have sat on the Mackey property, that goes back to around 1875. They built a distillery there on the property. And it was very large. They had warehouses on both sides of Licking Pike, which is the road that runs in front of Mackey. So it was a very large operation. And that's the first structure that was built on the property. A lot of people talk about slaughterhouses and that Mackey's was built on top of a slaughterhouse. Back in the late 1800s, that area was called Finchtown, and they did actually have several slaughterhouses. In fact, they had about 4 or 5 of them. Whether one sat exactly where Mackey's is, we don't really know for sure. The first documented building that we know that sat there was the distillery that was built in 1875. The distillery was built in 1876, and they are actually the ones dug the tunnels. There's actually 3 tunnels that go from the building down to the Licking River. And it was the distillery that dug those tunnels, and they were using it to pull water up from the river to make whiskey. And from what I understand, they were pulling about 250,000 gallons of water every day to make whiskey. And in fact, they were the largest distributor of Kentucky whiskey for over 40 years.
Okay. How did things progress after that?
Well, the distillery was there, like I said, around 40 years. Once Prohibition came around, then of course the distillery was shut down. They had had several fires there. No one died in the fires, though. But they did have several fires, and once Prohibition hit, they shut it down and tore most of the buildings down, except for a small building that eventually became Bobby Mackey's.
How long of a span, and what was the life of the building between this building that was left standing? What was going on there after the distillery, all the way up to the time Bobby Mackey's came into existence?
Well, it actually has a very long history. After the distillery shut down, a guy named John Popp bought the property, and he took that remaining building and he turned it into a cafe that he called the Bluegrass Inn. And the cafe was actually on the main level, and then he and his family lived on the lower level of the building. And in fact, they lived right over top of the well, what people refer to now as the portal to hell. They lived right on top of that, maybe not even knowing it was there, I don't know, but they did have a floor over it. He operated the Bluegrass Inn for several years, I'd say maybe 5 years. And he, again, had some fires in the building. He had been robbed several times, and I think he eventually just got tired of it and sold it to a guy named Buck Brady. Buck is the one that added all of the rest of the building on. He bought the small building and added on a huge ballroom and a casino and named it the Primrose Country Club. And that opened in 1943. So in 1943, he opened it as the Primrose Country Club. And he operated it for several years, but I'm not sure if you're aware of the mob history in Newport. It's quite extensive, and it's probably still going on today. But the Newport area was controlled by the Cleveland Syndicate. They ran a lot of clubs and casinos in Newport. Now, Wilder is a couple of miles outside of Newport, but still very close, and they didn't like having that sort of competition by someone who wasn't part of their crime family. So they eventually managed to run Buck out of town and took over the building, renamed it the Latin Quarter, and they kept that going even past Las Vegas. Once Las Vegas boomed, a lot of the clubs in Newport started getting a little seedy, going downhill, because all of the gambling moved out to Las Vegas. So at that point, they kind of stopped with the casinos, and they switched to bingo games, and they ran bingo games through the 60s, early 70s, until they finally closed it down completely. After that, it had a couple of small businesses come in. Most notably was called the Hard Rock. It was kind of a biker bar, and now we're up to like the mid-70s, the mid-1970s with that, and that was a very rough bar. And if you talk about people that would have died on the property, there were a couple of people who were shot in the parking lot during the Hard Rock days. And of course, even going back a little further to the mob owning the building in the Latin Quarter, we're guessing, we don't know for sure because they did not keep those types of records of who they killed, but we're guessing there were probably some people killed in the basement. There are bullet holes in the door down in the basement. So it's a good bet that there were some people killed in the basement down there. But then Bobby purchased it in 1978, and he's been there ever since.
Let's talk about why would Bobby decide to purchase this building with such a storied history, to put it lightly, of violence, of death, of mob involvement? What was his thought process in buying this structure? What was going through his mind?
Well, you know, honestly, I really don't think he knew about a lot of it. He knew that the Latin Quarter was there. He knew what type of place it was. But all he wanted, all he cared about, was having a building where he could sing. He just wanted to play music and sing and entertain people. And that was his whole reasoning for buying that building. He just saw that it was for sale. It was already set up with a nice stage and a big ballroom. And, you know, like I said, he just wanted to play music, and that was all he thought about. He says he doesn't believe in the paranormal and that he's really not experienced anything there. So when people would come to him with these stories of things that they had experienced, he would tell them, you know, just keep that to yourself. Just be quiet, because he didn't want it to get out that the place was haunted, because he thought nobody would come if they thought it was haunted.
Take me back. At what point in the history of this club can you trace back any stories of the paranormal? Does it begin when Bobby Mackey had taken it over, or are there any stories previous where people had accounts of anything happening when it was the Latin Club or anything previous to that?
I mean, I have never heard, of course, that was way before my time, but I've never heard, and because I've never met anybody, you're talking, you know, in the 50s and 60s or even the 40s, I've never met anyone that has told me that they experienced or even heard of any experiences there. I think most of it started with Carl Lawson, who was the caretaker maintenance man that Bobby hired when he bought the club in 1978. I think most of the stories originated with Carl. For some reason, maybe the spirits were drawn to him for some reason, but plus he lived there. He actually lived in the building for 13 years. So him being there basically 24 hours a day, that's when it started.
What were some of the first stories and accounts that Carl spoke of?
Well, Carl, when he was living in the building, he said he used to hear people downstairs constantly. His apartment was upstairs on the second floor, and he said at night when he would try to go to sleep, he would hear what sounded like hundreds of people walking around and talking downstairs. And of course, he'd go down and look, and there wouldn't be anyone there. Which that's, you know, that's a pretty benign experience. But then it started getting worse for him, and he felt like they were trying to possess him, in his words. These evil spirits that lived in the building were trying to possess him. And he eventually had an exorcism performed in the club, and I think, guess it was in the early 90s, to try to rid him of these spirits that he thought were trying to take over his body.
I never like to discount any sort of experience that anyone has, but I always want to ask the questions that may pertain to what's going on and what could possibly be an answer. Did anyone else at the time experience any of these things? Was it just Carl? Had he seeked out or any sort of medical advice or anything to see if there's anything else that, maybe going on with him that could have possibly been attributing to these experiences?
Right. I know where you're going with that, and I have to agree. I think Carl, I don't know that he ever sought actual medical help or psychiatric help, but I do think that he had his own demons, basically. Okay. And Bobby's even kind of said that Carl was different every time you talked to him. Like, you never knew exactly who you were going to be talking to when you ran into Carl. So I think there's a little bit of that going on. And, you know, I'm not trying to say that he's lying or that he's making anything up. That's, you know, just my impression from the things that I've heard about Carl. But Bobby's first wife, Janet, when he bought the club, she became friends with Carl, and she had some experiences in the club as well. She claimed that she turned on water in the sink because there used to be a kitchen. This was left over from the Latin Quarter. There was an old kitchen off to the side, and she was in there cleaning up, and she claimed that she turned on the water in the sink and that blood came out of the sink. That's, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a little fantastic for me. I'm not sure, but I mean, that was her story, and that's what she said. She also claimed that she was climbing a ladder while cleaning, and something tried to pull the ladder out from under her while she was on it. She claimed to be pushed down the steps when she was pregnant. These would be the steps that are going up to Carl's apartment, that something pushed her down the steps. And she actually, from what I understand, went into premature labor because she was pregnant at the time when she fell down the steps. Everything was fine, though. You know, her daughter has grown up. But yeah, those were some of the stories that Janet Mackey had told. And again, you know, she was friends with Carl, and, you know, I guess they sat around and talked about these things a lot.
Sure. You know, oftentimes when someone, if they are suffering from some sort of a mental illness or anything of that nature, and I'm not saying that he did or did not suffer from that, but we do hear stories so often where there are the targets of something paranormal, and so often their stories get discounted and put into the category of, oh, there's something not quite right with you, when in fact they are experiencing things, but it's much easier, I think, a lot of times for others just to write it off as, no, that's your condition. Well, some of the elements may be that. I think oftentimes there are other things that are going on that cannot be explained, that are very, very real. Let's talk a little bit more. What was Bobby's reaction when he was hearing stories like this? I know you said he said don't talk about it. Don't want to scare anybody off with Carl's stories. But when his own wife was coming to him with some of these accounts, what was his reactions to those stories?
I think it was pretty much the same. I actually saw, he was on the Geraldo show. I don't know if you remember the old Geraldo show back in the late 80s.
Sure.
He and Bobby and Janet and Carl all appeared on the Geraldo show to talk about these hauntings. And, you know, Janet and Carl were telling their stories and Bobby's just kind of sitting there smiling. And I think Geraldo asked him at one point, you know, do you not believe this? And he said, no, he doesn't believe it. He never offered, you know, any explanation as to why he thought they were telling these stories. He just didn't believe them. He just thought they had active imaginations and, you know, but yeah, he's just never believed in it. Either he doesn't want to believe in it or he doesn't want to admit that he believes in it. But publicly, he's always said that he doesn't.
When he went on the Geraldo show and when this kind of became a publicly known haunted building, what was Bobby's thinking? For so long, he didn't want the story to come out, didn't want the rumors to come out. What was his change of heart there?
Well, I think once he realized that people were interested in the paranormal rather than being frightened of it, although some people still are frightened of it, but I think a good majority of people are interested in it. So people were coming to the club, you know, in hoping to see something. So I think, you know, he kind of liked that because now he's making more money with the people who want to come to a haunted bar. So I think he kind of embraced it a little more at that point once he realized that it wasn't scaring people away. And so then they started, you know, offering tours to go down into the basement when the was open. And, you know, people loved it. People loved coming to do that.
Sure. Let's talk about some of the accounts and some of the experiences that have occurred on the property after it was starting to be well known that this was haunted. Some of the first accounts of early investigations coming in, or just patrons and staff of what were some of the first accounts beyond Carl and beyond Bobby's wife of haunted activity at the club?
Well, and I'll tell you a personal experience of mine. Well, not a paranormal experience, but just my recollection of the club. When I was in college here, because I'm from here, and I was in college in the late 80s, and I can remember people talking about Bobby Mackey's at my school. And now we're talking like 88, 89, and people were talking about Mackey's being haunted, and everybody went there on the weekends. And there were stories of weird things happening in the bathroom, specifically usually the women's bathroom. They could see faces in mirrors, or the water would come on its own in the sinks. The toilets would flush on their own. Again, this could be bad plumbing, but who knows? Those were the stories that were circulating just that I would hear. But after that, there was a pretty famous incident where a man was in the men's bathroom, and his name escapes me right now, but he was in the men's bathroom, and he claimed that some unseen force beat him up and threw a trash can at him. And he came out of the bathroom all bloody and saying that someone was in there fighting with him. And he actually tried to sue Bobby for this incident. Of course, it never really went anywhere, but Bobby's lawyer said, you need to put up a sign that says you're not responsible for anything that might happen to people who come in here because this place is reported to be haunted. And that sign hung up as soon as you walk in the door for years. And now there's a different sign up there, but yeah, that sign hung up there for years.
Did it ever make anybody stop and turn around and say, I'm not going in there?
That I don't know. I would imagine it might have.
Sure.
But I think most people, you know, I can tell you personally, if I saw a sign like that, I would get excited and
sure.
I would want to go in. So,
well, you're an investigator.
But that's just me.
It's a little different.
Yeah.
Sure. Let's hear some more accounts and stories before we get into the who or the what or the why of what's going on here. What are some of the other more notable accounts of encounters and experiences that people have had in the building over the years?
Well, I can tell you just from our experiences, this is our fifth year doing tours there. Things that happened before we started the tours, I don't, you know, really know too much other than what I've seen on TV on some of the shows that have filmed there. But since we've been there, we've had all sorts of things. We've had, shadows galore. I mean, that's just a common occurrence. Disembodied voices that you'll hear just with your ears. We have had people be scratched. We've had things thrown at us in the basement. There's an entity in the basement that we call the Shuffler, and that's what he does. He just shuffles his feet, and he has been heard on multiple occasions. You just hear him shuffling around in the basement. And there was one person who actually caught it on video where you can hear him, and that's the only video I've ever seen that actually captured the sound of the Shuffler, which is pretty cool. We've had, I saw what I believe was a full-bodied apparition up on the main floor in the ballroom, leaning against a pool table. Now, I've been doing this for years, I mean, probably 15 years, and I honestly have never seen anything that looked like a person standing there, a solid person. It wasn't a shadow. It wasn't a mist. It was a person. And I had come out of the gift shop. There were two guys in the club at the time. And I came out of the gift shop and I looked to the right, because we call that area the creepy corner. And I saw a guy leaning against the pool table. It didn't even startle me because I knew that I had two guys in the building at the time. So I just assumed it was one of them. And I took another step toward the bar and I heard a noise over in the back corner, what used to be the old kitchen. And I look over there and I saw both of their flashlights over in that corner. So of course I look back and my apparition is gone. He didn't stick around, but that was an amazing experience for me personally, because I have never seen anything like that before.
What was your reaction when you saw a full-bodied apparition? I mean, what was going through your mind at the time? Were you thinking that's a ghost at that exact moment, or was that more so something that came to your mind once you kind of had narrowed some things down? I'm always curious as to how one processes this when they're actually going through it.
Well, it wasn't scary to me or anything, really, because like I said, I thought it was one of the guys that I knew was in the building. So when at the very moment I saw it, I kind of dismissed it, and I just kept going. Then after I looked back and he was gone, that's when it hit me, like, wow, what did I just see? But again, I wasn't afraid. There wasn't any fear involved. It was a little bit startling at the time, and I wished that he would come back, but yeah, it wasn't anything frightening. I honestly don't think in the years that I've been there, I've ever truly been frightened. I've been startled. You know, I've been a little momentary shock or scared, but I've never been frightened as far as anything evil, that I felt like something evil was with me.
I want to talk about that for a moment on your feelings of being in the building. And let me ask you this, because it's kind of a precursor to the next question. A lot of folks, I think we can almost say it's like almost a 1 to 10 scale of being empathic to the other side. Some on the 10 level feel them, can hear them, can see them, when the rest of us are at the 1 level, can't see anything or feel anything. At the 1 level, it may be, feels kind of eerie in here, but that's about it. And then there's everything in between. How would you describe yourself on that scale as far as empathic and being able to sense or feel something of the other side in a haunted situation?
Wow. I don't like to talk about that, mainly because I've always said that I'm a huge skeptic, and I am. Mm-hmm. I'm very, very skeptical of everything. But now I've kind of changed that to calling myself a skeptical believer, because I've seen and heard and experienced way too many things to say that I don't believe, that I just flat out don't believe, because I used to say that all the time, that I just don't believe in this stuff. But then people will say, well, why are you doing this? Well, because, you know, I want to know. I want to know if there's something there. And there's a little thrill involved, I'll be perfectly honest, because a lot of people who are in this paranormal investigation will say, oh, it's not about the thrill. We don't like thrill seekers. But I think they're lying, because it is about the thrill. You know, you want to experience that, and it's exciting.
Sure.
But as far as being sensitive, I think I am to a certain extent. If I had to rate it 1 to 5, I would probably give myself a 6 or a 7. Just because I do sense things, and I hear things. Like, we'll have a recorder going, and I will think that I hear voices and nobody else hears them. But then when we play it back on the recorder, there were indeed voices, because you'll hear me say, a few seconds before that, did you guys just hear that?
Mm-hmm.
That talking? And everybody will be like, no, but when you play it back on the recorder, you'll hear it.
Sure.
So I think I'd give myself a 6 or a 7.
Okay. That's going to lead into this question of the first time you stepped into Bobby Mackey's music world. What was your sense? What were you feeling? What were you thinking? What, you know, how were your senses taking in the place? Was it just another building, or did you immediately sense? And I mean, obviously you already knew there was reports of things there, but what was your feelings going in through the doors?
To be perfectly honest, I was scared, because all I had heard at that time was there were demons, it was demonic, there was evil in the building. And so, yeah, I was a little shaky and nervous the very first time I went in there, which now has probably been about 8 or 9 years ago, the very first time I went in. And yeah, I was scared, because I didn't know what to expect, because I had seen things on TV, I had heard other stories, and I was scared first.
Had you ever encountered anything demonic or something that you would consider of that nature in any other investigations or anything of that nature up until that point?
In another location, no.
Okay.
No, I never had.
Okay. But the possibility lingered out there then of what if, with all of those stories. Let's talk about that, and why did the building, or why does the building have a reputation in the stories of being something very dark, something almost demonic going on there?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I believe that most of those stories originated with Carl Lawson. Because prior to that, just from talking to people that I've talked to over the last 5 years that we've been doing tours, nobody had ever heard of anything satanic or demonic associated with that location before Carl started telling his stories. And he has a book. I'll be honest, I have never read the entire thing, but it's called Hell's Gate. And it basically tells the story of everything he experienced while he lived there. And once that book came out, and once people got that information, I think that's when all of the demonic stories started.
Okay. Is that where the stories of the portal to hell began?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Because Carl, do you want me to tell you the story?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Carl claimed that he used to see the apparition of a young lady with long dark hair that would walk through the building, and she would come to him and tell him to go in the basement and dig, because remember, I told you before, the Pops lived there, and they lived on that bottom level of the building, and they had covered over the well or the tunnel, whatever you want to call it, with a concrete and wood floor. So it was completely covered up at that point. But Carl said that this woman would come to him and tell him he needed to go down there and dig up the floor. So apparently that's exactly what he did. He would go down there at night and just start hacking up the floor. And Bobby even mentioned once to us that he remembers going down there for something and seeing that the floor, there were big, you know, hunks of wood and stuff just torn out of the floor. And he's like, Carl, what are you digging for? What are you doing? And Carl said he wasn't sure. He was just told by some entity that he needed to tear up that floor. So he did. And he eventually got enough of the floor torn up that he uncovered the well, and that's how everything started, because he claimed that he found a diary in the well, which belonged to Johanna. I'm sure if anyone's familiar with Mackey's, they're familiar with Bobby's song Johanna and the legend of Johanna. But he claimed that the diary he found in the well belonged to Johanna, and it told her story, that she was a showgirl in the club. Her father owned the club. She became pregnant. Her father did not approve, so he had her boyfriend killed. Then Johanna was so distraught that she poisoned her father and that's, in a nutshell, that's the story of Johanna, and that's what Carl uncovered out of that well. But then he felt that once he uncovered that well, that's when all of the evil started coming into the building once that well was uncovered. And again, that's the story he told in his book, that once he uncovered that well, that just opened the gates for all of the demonic entities and evil spirits to come through and try to take over his body.
Has there ever been a way, or has the story of Johanna been confirmed at all?
No. And okay. Honestly, I think it was just a story that Carl told. I hate to say that mm-hmm. because it's such a popular legend. But if we have to be truthful when we're telling the history of a building, you know, there has never been any proof that Johanna existed. And in fact, if you know anything about mob history, if a mob boss owns a club, he's not going to let his daughter be a dancer in his own club. That just doesn't make historical sense. And besides that, nobody has ever found any death certificates or newspaper articles, because, you know, now it's so easy to get access to that kind of stuff with the internet. You think back in the 80s when Carl was telling the story, we didn't have that easy access that we do now. So nobody could verify it at that time. But now I think enough people who have, you know, made documentaries about Mackey's and researched it correctly have never found any evidence that she was a real person.
Did Carl ever produce the diary for anyone to see or confirm?
No. Convenient, I know. But he never showed it to anybody. He was the only one who saw it. And then somehow it was destroyed in a fire or something. I'm not really sure what happened to it. But nobody ever saw it. No pictures were taken of it. So, again, there's no proof to anything.
Is Carl still around?
Oh, no. He passed away in 2012.
Okay. Up until the end, did he maintain his stories of Bobby Mackey's?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he believed it. And I think that's, it was real to him. Okay. And I think that's what we have to understand, is that it was very real to him.
Sure. The well today, the portal to hell, however you want to call it. Is it still, I mean, obviously wells are wells, but is it still there in the basement?
Oh, yeah, it's still there. And it's not technically a well. I think that's just what people call it. It is an actual tunnel that the distillery dug, okay. And it does go out to the river. And many people, I have done it. I've crawled through it. We just walk over the train tracks and down the hill to the river, and there's the opening. And you can crawl all the way up to the other side of the train tracks. And then the tunnel kind of turns left. And at that point, it's very, very small. You'd have to crawl on your belly to get through there. And at a certain point, it's filled up with dirt because Bobby had them put in, because I guess he didn't want, you know, critters and stuff coming in through it. So it is filled in with dirt right now.
Okay. Let's talk about some of the voices that you've picked up, whether it be you've audibly heard with or without equipment and with equipment. What are some of the voices saying that are audible in Bobby Mackey's?
Most of the audible voices that we have heard, I couldn't tell you what they're saying because it happens so fast, and of course you can't hit rewind and listen to it again. But we've definitely heard them, and most of them are male, and most of them happen around the bar area, which is interesting because the first documented death that happened on the property was in 1943 when it was the Primrose Country Club. Apparently, two men got in an argument in the men's bathroom, which has since been relocated. The men's bathroom used to be at the opposite end of the bar from where it is now. But they got in an argument in the bathroom. One guy, I guess he was punched or shoved, but he fell and hit his head on the radiator, and he actually died on the floor of the men's bathroom. So a lot of times when I hear male voices in that area, for some reason, I just think it's him. I don't know that. But I just always think that it's him because he had such a brutal and untimely death in the bathroom of a bar. It's kind of sad. So I've just always thought that it was him that is talking to us there. As far as other voices that we've recorded, we captured a pretty good one when we were in the basement several years ago. And it's a long sentence. And you can hear all of us out in the basement. And then you'll hear a woman's voice say, she does not like all these people in here. It's a very, I've never heard such a long EVP, but it's clear, and it says she does not like all these people in here. Don't know who she is. I don't know who said it, but somebody doesn't like all these people in here. We've heard some other ones, females in the basement a lot for some reason. I had an incident a few weeks ago. I was leaving. My tour group had already left, so I was alone in the building. And I was walking out of the gift shop, which is where we, you know, sign in the tours and everything. I was walking out. I had my hands full. I had the keys to the bar. I had my car keys. I had my case. I had a bottle of water. So my hands were completely full. I walked out of the gift shop, and to my right, I hear a male voice say, "Hey." It was just, "Hey." And it was loud, and it was kind of gravelly. It scared me to death. I dropped the water. I dropped my keys. And then I'm like, and I called him a bad name. And then I left because he really scared me and startled me. But it's mostly things like that. They're usually pretty short, other than that one really long one we got. But nobody's ever told us a name. You know, a lot of people come in there and want to talk to Johanna or Pearl Bryant and Scott Jackson, who I can tell you their story if you'd like.
Yeah, but, I'd love to.
You know, we have heard a name. And nobody has ever walked up and said, "Hi, I'm Jim." So as far as who's actually haunting, I couldn't tell you. I've had some people come on the tour who were psychic mediums. Several of them, in fact, have told me that they believe, for whatever reason, Mackie's, you could sort of think of it as a way station for spirits, that they just kind of pass through and then move on somewhere else, that they might not necessarily be tied to that building for some reason, that they just pass through. And that should be what we're experiencing.
That concludes part one of our interview with Laura about Bobby Mackey's music world. In part two, exclusively for Gravekeeper members, we'll discuss the land that Bobby Mackey sits on and the possible curse of that land. The tragic story of Pearl Bryant and her connection to the land. Demonic forces that may be lurking the halls of Bobby Mackey's. Also, what explanations have been tried to be given to explain away paranormal events at Bobby Mackey's Music World. And we'll answer the question of, does Bobby today believe, indeed, that his club is haunted? To hear part two of the interview, sign up to be a Gravekeeper through our website at thegravetalks.com or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. It's only $5 and you'll have access to every advanced released episode of our program before anybody else, many times weeks, even months before they go public, as well as exclusive part two interview segments that are always exclusive to Gravekeeper members. That's how we support the show and keep it on the air. If you enjoy the Grave Talks, I encourage you to please become a Gravekeeper for only $5 a month and get access to all of these exciting features and become part of that community and more. TheGraveTalks.com or Patreon.com/TheGraveTalks. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.